Red, we are in Genesis chapter 4. In this series called Creation and Chaos, and we saw the essence of creation, how God created all things. And then the past few weeks, we've been looking more at the chaos, the fall, kind of what is wrong with the world. We saw how sin enters the world, and we saw the curse last week, why it makes our relationships and our work and even just being who we desire to be. Why is that all so difficult? And then we're going to continue in that theme. We see kind of the source of the challenges of the world that we find ourselves in. One thing that I don't know if it's just the kind of like my eyes are just more aware or my heart is just like more inclined, but sometimes like when you're preaching on something, like you start seeing things throughout the week. And so last week we saw the sacrifice of the first animal. And then this week we're going to see the world's first murder. So welcome to church. It was Thursday morning, and I actually this is all kind of coming together for me a little bit, and I'm starting to like better understand. And I you know, kids get off to school and kind of clean some stuff up, and I start doing some reading for the message. And then I let the dog out, and I'm like, yeah, the dog's pretty quiet in the backyard. And I'll back up for a second. So we have this dog, she's part Burmese mountain dog. And so I take her for walks, and like, she always wants to go after the squirrels and the rabbits. Like, I mean, and she is strong. And there's this kind of, I'll talk about this. There's this dark part of me, I think. I just want to let her go and see, like, would she catch the bunny? I'm sorry, it's twisted. It's just in there. And I just want to know. And so anyway, I'm like, the dog's quiet in the backyard. And then I kind of walk out, and then like just as happy as can be, like just sitting there like just dead bunny right at her feet. She caught the bunny. And so I did my whole thing where I went and got the bunny and removed it. And so I was like, oh, we're seeing death. We're seeing these things. And this is what's going on in the story. And I was like, how awful is this? I was like horrified by it. I'm like, even a dead bunny kind of freaks me out. And I'm just like, we got a story of a person that took another person's life. It says he went out into the field and he killed his brother. And so if I'm horrified, and I think you're probably horrified at me of watching this dog kill a bunny, what do we make of this? What do we make of the violence, the killing, what's going on in our world? Fast forward to Friday night, we're always looking, like everybody else, like searching the internet for good shows. And Apple TV came out with a new documentary on Martin Scorsese. And so it started off Friday. So we watched it. I enjoyed the first episode. It's pretty dark and a little graphic. So if you're not into your thing, so do that. But one of the questions that they asked to start this whole documentary is the critique of Scorsese is that he is too violent. That he is too violent, that what he shows is too graphic and it's too awful. Now, they also said others' perspective is like, that's his genius. That he actually asked the questions that we all should be asking. He asked the questions of goodness, of evil, of mercy, of forgiveness. He displays violence. They talked about his childhood. He's like, that's just what he grew up with. He was an immigrant from Italy, and he was living in a borough. And he's like, this is just what I saw every day. It was just violence. And then Scorsese, they say he just kind of asked the questions that we all should be asking. He asked, like, who are we and what are we? And he puts those into film. And then they're interviewing him, and he's just like, yeah, we need to ask these questions. Are we intrinsically good? Or are we intrinsically evil? And what he said is, what he has seen, he said, myself included, is anyone is capable of evil given the right circumstances. Anyone is capable of evil. Anyone is capable of violence given the right circumstances. And what I think was very honest and helpful with him, he was honest about it. He goes, oh, I can see the allure. I can see the allure of power, of control, of wanting things to go your own way. He said, this is the struggle that we all have. And they talked about Scorsese, and they said, yes, he's very unique. He's like part gangster and part sinner, because he was very devout Catholic, and he called himself the sinner saint. It said he was a master of explaining the dark side of the human condition. To reveal these things that are all within us. And that's what happens in this passage. It reveals the dark side of not just what's out there and what's in here, and then what's in here, what's in our hearts. Why is there evil? Why is there violence? And so what we find in Genesis chapter 4 is the story of sin. But we know the scriptures, sin isn't the end of the story. It's not even the beginning of the story. The beginning of the story of the scriptures is one of God's goodness, of his generosity, of his beauty. And then the rest of the scriptures is a story of grace. And so although this is a story of sin, it's literally the first time the word sin is used in the Bible. It says, and if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is contrary to you, but you must rule over it. So we see it's the first use of the word sin, the first person that's killed in the Bible. And so we often just think of like the Sunday school answer. Oh, read Genesis 4, right? Don't be like Cain and be like Abel. Like, thanks. Welcome. Let's do community. Like, but have you ever tried that? Have you ever tried not to sin? We'll get into it a little bit more. And one of my things is like, I don't think you would make it. If you looked at sin, what it actually is, it talks about sin is lawlessness. We wouldn't even make it out of this gym without sinning. So it's not good news if it's like, okay, be like Abel, make the right offering, and don't be like Cain, don't do what is wrong. It only reveals our problem. And what we'll see is that we're actually more like Cain than Abel. The scriptures start with this bad news, that we all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. No one does right. And so it's why we need the underneath story, or the real point of the story. Because as we're reading the story of sin and murder, what's kind of threaded through it is a story of grace and a story of life. Frank read it, and I didn't pick it up at first, but the guys at the Bible Project talked about that this, and Karina mentioned it, it starts with worship. It starts with a birth of a child and worship. It says that Eve gave birth to Cain and Abel, and she worshiped God. She thanked God, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. And the passage ends with worship. It says, Adam knew his wife again, and she bore him a son and called his name Seth. God has appointed for me another offspring instead of Abel, for Cain had killed him. And it says, at that time, people began to call upon the name of the Lord. And so if the point isn't to be like Cain, right? Can we all agree on that? Don't go kill people. Thanks, Pastor. And it's impossible to be like Abel, to be perfect. I want to propose that Eve is the one that we can actually learn from in this passage. Eve's actually the person that is transformed by grace. She's the beginning and she is the end. And that's what we see in this passage. So what we're going to learn from Cain in the first section is that we need to heed the warning of the passage. We need to heed the warning of sin and its effects. That sin has affected all of us more than we can even imagine. The second thing I want us to see is that we need to understand the grace of God which pursues. So in the midst of this death and sin, we see a God who pursues, who comes after, who is seeking life. And then we'll see in Eve that God's grace actually transforms us, that it actually changes us, that actually conforms us more into his image. So we'll start with the bad news. And what we see in this passage from the beginning of chapter 4 through the end of chapter 4 is we see the growth of sin. 1 John 3:4 simply says that sin is lawlessness. It's to violate God's laws and his ways. Remember how I talked about a fish last week? And a fish is meant to live within the confines of water. Like, that's what it's created for. We were created to live within the confines of God's creation, of his order, of his ways. And you take the fish out of water, and what happens to it? It dies. Weston's in the process of building a new fish tank. And this has become like a real process. And I guess if you just get a fish tank and you throw a fish in it, that fish will die. You need to do stuff to the water. It needs to be the right sort of pH, all this stuff. It's like a two-week process. I've getting some head nods. So people have been through this. It has been great. So we don't want the fish to die. We want to have the right conditions for the fish to live. And so that's what we did. So when we live outside of God's creation, when we live outside of God's laws, when we live outside of God's ways, it leads to death. And the essence of sin is to build our identity, to build our life on anything outside of who God is. And when we do that, it's called sin. And we learn some things about sin in this passage. And three things that we'll see is, one, that sin, it starts subtly. It's small. But then sin eventually overtakes. And then sin also has much further implications than we, much further reaching implications than we can even know. But the first thing we see is sin starts subtle. It's small. Before the word sin is even used in verse 7, we can see the seeds of it laid out. Now, I said Eve is going to be the example of one who is transformed and changed. But she starts out with a response to God that is actually the seeds of sin. God called Eve the mother of all living. He said, through your seed, this one will come that will crush the head of the serpent. Remember that from chapter 3? And so she says in verse 1 and 2, it says, and now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. And again, she bore his brother Abel. Now, Abel was a keeper of the sheep, and Cain a worker of the ground. A couple of things that aren't necessarily the clearest on the surface. Is she conceived two sons, that's clear. But in the verse of birth of Cain, it says, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. When she has Cain, what she immediately thinks is like, oh, God said I would have a seed that would crush the head of the serpent. Look what I did. I birthed Cain. He's going to crush the head of the serpent. This is who he is. She even names this one that is like successful, purposeful. That's what it means. And she says, I have gotten a man. It's real weird language. She's talking about a grown man. She didn't say like, oh, I conceived and had a baby. Katie, we're almost there, right? I'm going to have a baby in the next couple weeks, right? No, she's like, oh, I had the man. I had a man. And basically what she is saying, what the language is going at, she's like, I have done this. This is what I have done. I had this baby. I conceived this baby. I'm going to produce the one who is going to crush the head of the serpent. It's about who? Her. I did this. One commentator called it just synergism. And a lot of us, this is our view of Christianity. Like, God does his part, and I do my part. God does his part, I do mine. And it becomes about us. Even how she names, we know this because she names Abel. The word for Abel is just vapor. It's saying that he doesn't even matter. Now, it was also looking ahead that his life was short, but did she know his life was going to be short? No. She named him Abel because, like, hey, he didn't even matter because this one I produced is the one that matters. So Abel is actually the second born. He's the nobody. He's not for anything. He's there, like, he's just a vapor. He's just there. He's meaningless. Why? Because I produced Cain. Look what I did. This is what happens to us as Christians, by the way. This is what happens to me, right? I was like the furthest thing from a Christian. I was like the pagan of pagans, right? God works in my life. I'm like, oh, this is true. My cousin explained the Bible to me. He's answering my questions. I'm like looking at life. I'm like, this is true. I was like, I think I'm a Christian. I actually believe this, right? And then you become a Christian, and what happens? God changes you. God transforms you. He gives you new desires. He gives you new pursuits. He gives you new values. And your life begins to look different. And my life looks different. And then what do? Like, oh, look at me. Look how good I'm doing. And then look at those people. Look at what they're doing. What's wrong with them? How could they do such a thing? Now, who changed my life? Who gave me a new desire? Who transformed me more and more? It was all a gift. It was all grace. It was all God. So when you begin to look down on other people and, oh, how could this Cain kill his own brother? Like, we begin to look down on other people. This is what Eve was doing at the beginning. Like, look what I have done. Look what I have accomplished. You're like, Eve, you just brought sin into all of humanity a chapter prior. And now where is she? But is this not the Christian life? Do you guys, anybody else struggle with it? Is this me? This is the Christian, like, look, God does all this great stuff. And you start looking at ourselves like, no. This is all grace. This is all a gift. This is all from God. Does he say, don't change? Like, no, change. Become more like Jesus. But when you do that, you become what? When you're actually like Jesus, you become humble and merciful and gracious and patient and kind. And you love your enemies. And you don't look down on people that are different than you. It starts subtle. It started subtle with Eve. Look what I have done. Look what I have accomplished. Look at me. And we see the subtlety of sin in this story of Cain and Abel as well. This was fascinating. It was a sermon by Tim Keller called Sin and Grace that, like, I was like getting to this point. I was like, oh, I don't think this is about Cain and Abel. I think it's actually about Eve. And he just started talking about this subtleness of sin and this grace that pursues. And he got way more into the weeds than I will. But you see this on Cain and Abel. And he talked about it on the surface. They're no different. It wasn't like Cain was some degenerate. Cain wasn't. They both had jobs. They were both working. They were both providing. They both brought sacrifices to God. Right? They both worshiped at the altar. They were both giving. Cain prays. Cain's talking to God. Right? He's having a conversation. That's called prayer. He's having a conversation. Because don't we think this? Cain bad, Abel good. Be like Abel. They were both good. Cain was actually upset because his offering wasn't good enough. He's like, God, I gave this to you. And then he's upset. Why? Because he thought it was good enough. A challenge for me is Cain is actually doing more than most of us Christians. He's actually more faithful. We like to throw him in this category. But again, sin is very subtle. And what Keller said is that anyone can see murderous sin. We can see the end of the line. Yeah, like, don't kill people. Don't be like Cain. Verse 8 says, Cain spoke to Abel, his brother, and when they were in the field, Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. Like, don't do that. And anybody can see, like, oh yeah, don't that. But the question we need to ask, and what Keller asks, is like, can we catch sin early? Do we catch sin before it turns into stuff that destroys other people? It says that Cain made this offering, and it said, and the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering, he had no regard. And in verse 5, it says, so Cain was very angry, and his face fell. Cain's murder started off just as anger. It started out, he was depressed. His face fell. He was saddened. Why? Because Abel's offering was more successful. The meaningless one had a better offering. The successful one was worse, was unacceptable. It was a matter of the heart. Commentators talk about how Cain was just indifferent about his offering. That it was safe. It wasn't made with gratitude. But Abel offered his best. It was risky. It would have cost him. He put God first. And so we need to be able to say, like, hey, can we catch sin early? We need to pay attention to our hearts because sin starts subtle. But even though it starts subtle, it eventually overtakes. Verse 7, Says the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry and why has your face fallen? It says, if you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is contrary to you. Its desire is to have you, but you must rule over it. The crouching at the door, it's like an animal waiting to strike. What does an animal try and do? It tries to look small. It tries to look hidden. It tries to not appear. Most sin doesn't look bad on the surface. It doesn't start even necessarily bad. A lot of sin is making good things the best, but it's waiting to strike. The NIV says that its desire is to have you. Sin starts kind of as a personal choice. Verse 7 says it. You have the option. You can either do good or you could not do good. You just make the choice, and you have the ability to make the choice. Like, I can respond in anger or I cannot respond in anger. I can be generous or I can be greedy. But it gets to the point that it becomes a power. And there becomes a point that you can't not sin. You can't not do the thing. That's why they call it addiction, right? You can't not do it. You're addicted to it. That's why the scriptures say that we're enslaved to sin. It uses the language of a master. It eventually overtakes and take you away. Verse 16, it's very sad. It says, then Cain went away from the presence of the Lord and settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden. Sin becomes a power. James 1:14 says, but each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. It starts internal. It says, then desire, when it has conceived, gives birth to sin, and sin, when it's fully grown, brings forth death. That starts as a desire, a thing that you can identify and turn from and crush and kill, or you're lured by it, you're enticed by it, and it results in sin, right? Let's just get more practical. Like, the hard worker, like, doesn't start out working hard intending to destroy their family by overworking, right? Nobody starts out like, I want to be a workaholic and destroy my family. That's not where it starts. What does it start with? A good desire to work hard. And what happens? It overtakes us, and we can't not work, right? The addict doesn't start thinking what they are addicted to will destroy their life, right? I got to a point in my life where I just could not drink. Did it start that way? No. I could give it or take it, right? Then I just couldn't imagine life without that. It had power over me. Before becoming a Christian, I tried to stop drinking one time. I started, like, New Year's resolution in January. Like, I couldn't even make it to February. I didn't know how to function. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have a place to go. Why? It had a power. I couldn't not do it. Did I start out that way? No. Right? The person over desiring beauty didn't start out by saying, I want to make myself look like unimaginable, like I've never looked before. They just want a beauty. And then it overtakes and it destroys. So sin starts subtle, it eventually overtakes, and then it has much further reaching implications than we can ever know. So not only did he kill his brother, Cain spoke to his brother Abel, and when they were in the field, Cain rose up against his brother and killed him. That's bad enough. It gets passed down to his son. And look at verse 19. It says, and Lamech took two wives. So again, he's already in sin. The name of the one was Adah, and I won't go through that. And then he reads this poem in verse 23. It says, I have Listen to what I say. I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for striking me. He was offended by what somebody said to him, a younger person, somebody young, and so he killed him. And he says, if Cain's revenge is sevenfold, then Lamech's is 77-fold. He turns from God, but then his son goes on to mock God, mock his grace, takes advantage of his grace. Because he said, if Cain is forgiven seven times, I'll be 70. I'll need way more than that. The sin of Adam and Eve, of Cain, of Lamech, has implications on all of us. What we do, our sin, has implications on others. This is a big lie. We're like, oh, it's just me. I'm only hurting myself. Like, no, we're not. We're hurting everybody else. I saw this, even I'm thinking about it now. I was, I had these, like, I still have them, great nephews. Like, I was like a terrible uncle. I would be hanging out with them. I was just like, I couldn't wait to go out. It has implications on more than we can ever see. And so the warning, what we need to see is, can we identify our sin? What Keller said, do you know your crouching sin? This is a list of the seven deadly sins. Karina was like, where'd you get that book? I was like, I had it from seminary. It's a really good book by Oz Guinness. And I was looking at this list, and I was like, our culture doesn't even call any of these things sin. This is like the goal. This is the goal of the world we live in. Look what I've done. I want to look at what everybody else has, and I want that. It's called social media, right? Our life is based on envy. Anger. Well, you're just not mad. Like, things are right. You should take things in your own hand. There can be a goal of sloth, of like, I want to do as little as possible. What's the goal of our world? Like, I want to retire to what? Not do anything. Welcome to Jupiter. Greed. Get more. Gluttony. Still haven't had that confessed yet. We live in the most affluent, have the most stuff place in time in history ever. Still have yet somebody, Pastor Brian, I'm just really struggling with gluttony of just wanting too much. Lust. It's what everybody says, like that's what you need. All these things will end up destroying you. And they start subtly, and they start actually as good things. Do you know your sin? Can we battle our sin? So there is a warning in this passage, but the bigger point of this passage is this grace that pursues. Again, like with Adam and Eve, God doesn't just leave them in a sin, he pursues them. Tim Mackey talks about these are just mirrored chapters. Chapters 3 and chapters 4 are just doing the same thing. It's just on repeat. Because you see it with their kids. Like Eve, we see God respond to Cain's sin with grace. And he responds with grace before his murder and after it turns to murder. God pursues and seeks him. And what we need to understand about, so yes, we have sin, but God's grace goes further. It is better. It is more. And what we see is that grace initiates and is gentle. Look at verse 6. So after Cain had held back his offering, after knowing Cain's heart, God comes alongside Cain and asks him a question. The Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? Why has your face fallen? When Pastor said that God comes to Cain not as a teacher, what do we do when like our kids sin or our friends mess up? What do? We come to them as teachers. Like, let me tell you what you should have done. He doesn't come to them as a teacher, but a counselor. He comes to him not as a prophet telling them what he did wrong, but as a priest. He comes to him with compassion. He comes to him with grace. He comes to him with love. Paul Borgman, a professor, said, Cain has choices. He is not doomed to be second rate in God's eyes, nor in his own. He said, to be declared okay by God is to be okay, period. So God comes to him. God pursues him. He's like, hey, let's take care of this. He says, but the ball is in his court. What will he do? He's had nothing less than a divine coach. This encouragement from God and the responsibility given to Cain to choose right or wrong are at the heart of this little drama. It's focus. God comes to Cain with his grace, and he initiates towards him with his love, and he is gentle with him. Why are you angry? Why is your face falling? Why are you down? What did you do? And God's grace does another thing. It also uncovers and brings conviction. He does ask him to look inside. Why are you so angry? Why are you so shaken? Keller said that God will not let Cain refuse to look inside. God will not let Cain refuse to look inside. God comes alongside Cain in his sin, and he seeks to expose it, not to bring condemnation, so he could be free from it. He wants freedom from sin. He doesn't want him to be enslaved by sin. Even after he kills his brother, he gives him a chance to come clean. What does he say? Where's your brother Abel? God's grace brings conviction too. Verse 10, he says, and the Lord said, what have you done? The voice of your brother's blood, after he denied the whole thing, the voice of your brother's blood is crying out to me from the ground. What have you done? The ground's crying out. And in his response, Cain continues to focus on himself. He makes it all about himself, which is at the essence of sin. When you work the ground, it shall no longer yield to you its strength. In verse 12, you shall be a fugitive and wander on the earth. And it said, Cain said to the Lord, my punishment is greater than I can bear. My punishment is greater than I can bear. I'm not talking about my brother who is now dead. Behold, you have driven me today away from the ground, and from your face I shall be hidden. I shall be a fugitive and wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me. He's still making it about himself. The offering was about him. His response to God's grace is about him. Cain had the opportunity to, what Keller called, the opportunity to cooperate with grace. To use his sin, to experience God's grace and use it as an opportunity to experience forgiveness, to repent, to grow, to change. Cain had that. That's what God's trying to do. He's trying to help him change, to be transformed. Or he could refuse grace and he could get more angry, he could get more anxious, he can get more despairing and more focused on self and rejection of God. God is using everything in our lives to either to help us see the sin in it, to be awakened to his grace, to see the pain our sin causes, to see the life that life with God can bring, to draw us to himself. And we could either accept it or refuse it. And what's even more astounding than all of it is even after all of this, God's grace continues. He's like, hey, they'll kill me. And then the Lord said to him, not so. If anyone kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord put a mark on Cain, lest any of him who found him should attack him. And then it says, even after that, Cain went away from the presence of the Lord. So God put this mark on him. God is even protecting him in his complete rebellion and rejection of God. Mike Cosper put it this way. He says in the book Rhythms of Grace, Cain's exile is both a mark of shame, exposing him as a murderer and a villain, right? He killed somebody. But it's also a mark of grace, with God saying, he belongs to me and I will protect him. God isn't done with Cain because he isn't done with any of us. God's grace continues and continues and continues. You can't outrun the grace of God. Now, what's God trying to do? Awaken him to his sin. Romans 1 does say that God gave them over to the lust of their heart. At some point, Cain will die. At some point, you will die. At some point, I will die. And God does punish sin because he's loving. But until then, everything is God's grace trying to awaken us to know him. We need to ask ourselves, what do we think is beyond the grace of God? Where do you think you're beyond the grace of God? Where is God and his grace seeking to bring conviction in your life in order to, what, not condemn you, but to set you free, to live true life? So we have the growth of sin, but then this grace that pursues, that ultimately transforms. And we see this in Eve. So the answer isn't to be like Abel and don't be like Cain. The Bible's answer is always to take your eyes off yourself and put your faith in Jesus. And this is what we see in Eve. Again, verse 1. I have done this. God has pointed for me another offspring. Or I'm sorry. Verse 1 said, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. And look at her language in chapter verse 25. And Adam knew his wife again, and she bore a son and called his name Seth. Seth literally means granted. God gave me this child. Does that have anything to do with Eve? No. God has appointed for me another offspring instead of Abel, for Cain killed him. Did she forget the brokenness, the sin that she had experienced in her life? No. She let it transform her. She let it change her. And then it says that he named his son Enosh, which means weakness. Weakness is a person that is dependent on God. It went from Eve being strong, look what I did, it's about me, to Enosh. I am weak, I am dependent, I am needy. That's the posture of grace. That's the posture of faith. That's what God is inviting us to depend on him. Eve took everything that she went through. She went through her sin. She was the source of all this, her and Adam. She saw the effects of sin on others. I mean, could you imagine? I mean, I had a hard time with a dog and a bunny in the backyard. Could you imagine if your one son took the life of your other son, who was supposed to be the promised one who is going to rescue and save the world? I mean, I get in my head about my parenting failures. Can you imagine what Eve was staying up thinking about? But she took her sin. She took the effects of sin on her and trusted that God could forgive her and trusted that God could bring new life through it, which is ultimately what this whole thing is all about. And it's ultimately what God did through Jesus. It says it very cleanly in Hebrews chapter 12, 24. It says that Jesus' blood speaks a better word than Abel. It says Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, of a new promise, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. So Abel is killed and his blood is spilled, and it says that the ground is crying out for mercy. The ground is crying out for justice. Abel sheds the blood of an animal as an act of worship. But what we see in Jesus is God shed his own blood so that we can worship him. Where Abel's blood cries out, Jesus' blood cries out for us. It moves us. It shapes us. That's why the call of the Christian life is to behold Jesus. We're about to sing it. Behold him, behold him, behold him. When we look to Jesus, we can see that no one is beyond the grace of God. When we behold him, we understand that all of our circumstances are used to wake us up, to compel us to turn to him, to depend on him, to trust in him. It moves us from being like Eve, like, oh yeah, better clean myself up, just me and then God. And we need to do this together, to a posture of all I have, all I do, all I am is from the grace of God. Robert Murray McShane says, when we need to behold Jesus, and for every look at sin, every look we take at our sin, we need to take 10 looks at Jesus. It's easy to look at our sin, stare at it, fix our eyes on it, and it leads to shame, condemnation. The point of the passage isn't to look at the sin. It's to look at our Savior. So he says, take one look at sin and 10 looks at Jesus. That's why we're going to sing this song. Behold him, behold him, behold his grace, behold his mercy, behold his forgiveness. Trust in him, turn to him, let him change you. It's the second thing we do, we become like Jesus. When we behold Jesus and we understand his grace, when we understand his mercy, when we understand his forgiveness, when we understand his patience with us, what does that compel us to do towards other people? If God is that gracious to you and that kind to you and that patient with you and that merciful to you, how can you look down on anybody else? How can you not grant forgiveness towards anybody else? How can you not pursue anybody else? When I think what God had to do to pursue me, why would I not go after everybody else and share this grace, this mercy? Keller says that it calls us who were once like Cain to become like Abel through his love. And to go and love all the Cains in this world. In a world of violence, in a world of hate, in a world of division, in a world that holds grudges and has agendas. We're people who go out with love and forgiveness and mercy and life. And so our prayer and as our hope is that we would behold Jesus. We would look to him. It frees us to identify our sin. Why? Because we're already accepted by him. We're already loved by him. He already died on the cross for it. We're free to not have to just push it aside or hide it or cover it up. We can actually identify it. Jesus already died for it. It's already forgiven. God comes alongside you like, let's actually deal with it. Let's be changed. Let's be transformed. And then let's go out and bring this good news. Let's bring this message to a world in need of it. Let's pray.